That's the good stuff. Outstanding. This is a recommendation request from State Senator Doug Broxson, who is on the line right now as a finished his final term as a state. I mean, he's still obviously through November, but finished his final session. So he doesn't have to campaign. He doesn't have to fundraise. He doesn't have to go, you know, read through appropriations documents. He is D-O-N-E, done. Doug Broxson, State Senator for District 1. Welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to be home.
how did it feel coming home from Tallahassee this time?
You know what? It was a great, we had a good ending, and I gave my farewell speech a couple weeks ago, and that kind of was tapped off the emotion of leaving. And now I'm ready to, as I said, get ready to, in 8 years, when I'm 83, to run for president.
When you're finally old enough, right? I love that.
Right.
You know, I did a kind of a couple of segments where I talked about the tribute that was paid to you. You know, it's great to have the tribute that you had from all the other state senators, but particularly I thought that the tribute from Democrats, it's when your opponents, you know, are the ones who pay tribute to you. That's when it really means something because, I mean, somehow you managed to strike a statesman-like, position that they respect you, that you were they could trust you. And Jason Pizzo's comments were, you know, fantastic, and I echoed them completely. You joke about running for president in 8 years, or you're not. I mean, I don't know. But do you have a next
joke?
Do you have a next activity planned?
You know, I do. It's fairly complicated to take the whole program to tell you, but it has to do with the oil spill and how we've fallen behind in the 5-state division of money called Restore.
Uh-huh.
And I want to get involved in that, make sure that since we have the most coastline, we should really be second behind Louisiana, and now we're falling probably at number 5. So that shouldn't be, and hopefully I can convince the governor that I can be his representative there and get us some our proportionate share.
All right. Well, so not done with public service just yet, which I think is exactly what I would have expected from you. Let's talk just a little bit about this session because it just wrapped up. I had not realized, and I apologize for not realizing, we talked to Michelle Salzman last hour, and you were the Senate companion for several of the bills that she had also filed and succeeded on, including the motor vehicle registration for people that might have special needs, members of their family in the car. Sheriff Bob Johnson, very active on that bill. You also helped sponsored the Dozier School for Boys. And I am assuming, as appropriations chair in the Senate, was very influential in getting the $20 million for the compensation fund.
That's true, but I give all the credit to Michelle. She championed that. It was the right thing to do. It's a chapter in the history of Florida we needed to correct. And we did that, and the living members of that abuse were there in the chamber when it passed, and it was very emotional. And again, it was the right thing for us to do to correct the mistakes of the past.
When you anything else from session that you particularly want to talk about? I mean, the big topic this year obviously was HB1 that got vetoed, that then got rolled into HB3 with some tweaks and changes. I kind of had a different perspective on this because of a conversation actually I was having with Michelle Salzman the other day, is that even if it doesn't particularly do much, it sort of sets our stake in the ground and gives other states the opportunity to say, we're going to follow Florida's lead. And if we can get this done on a national level, it could really start to have some impact and save and help some children.
Absolutely. I mean, you think about this HB3, within 4 days of a young person, and many of them are getting phones at 12, 13, they'll be introduced to pornography and all the other ills that come with that. And there's no protection. It's just they're defenseless. The algorithms they've created just makes it impossible to protect your kids. Once you give them that, you introduce them to a world that a lot of it's not very good. Some of it's very good, but a lot of it is very, very bad for them. And we spent a lot of time talking with that. You know, Andrew, we're going through a cultural change in this country, and it's fearful. We're the greatest country that's ever been. We have the greatest economy that's produced enormous wealth and also wealth for people that don't have wealth. We help people all around the world. We help people here. 25% of our budget is helping people that can't afford insurance. Those are things you do with a vast economy, and Florida is one of those great economies, the 13th largest economy in the world, and we do good things, and I'm proud to be part of that. One of the problems with all this cultural change is embedded in kind of an anti-American spirit, and a lot of this is being fostered by the university system, and we're really speaking very directly against that narrative, because we are the greatest country, and why change? Why do we have to have all these major changes?
You know, I used to teach for about 10 years. I taught philosophy at the college level, you know, like 20 or 30 years ago, 30 years ago. And it was obvious then, and has been obvious for a long time, that all of your liberal arts, you know, social studies type programs have been captured by the left for forever. There were, you know, some of the sort of the engineering, hard sciences, things like that, that weren't as ideologically bent, and so it wasn't kind of quite the same way. But, you know, conservatives had just not done much to push back against this until, you know, this last handful of years. But that stuff's not really going to change. Like, if you externally try to make people be fair, be even, be open, that's never going to really work until you get, you know, ideological diversity in the teaching profession, right? The only way to fix the liberal arts is to get contrasting views represented by the teachers. And, you know, that's a much harder thing to accomplish than just putting sort of, you know, restrictions on what they can teach.
Absolutely. We've gotten tremendous pushback from many, many segments that says, we don't want you messing with our system. We want you to fund it. We gave record funding to universities and colleges and K-12. But we're now speaking to, we want you to be pro-American, whatever that means. And a lot of it cuts across a lot of emotions, people that do not feel like they've been treated fairly throughout history. And but do you break down a system today to fix something that happened 200 years ago? I don't think so.
Yeah, and then, you know, even push back on something like the teaching of communism so that maybe children can learn that tens of millions of people, pushing 100 million people, have been killed in the last century by this one philosophy, you know. And yet, if you go into your political science and your philosophy departments at any university, you're pretty likely to find people who sympathize with or outright advocate for that. It is amazing. You mentioned something a minute ago. You're talking about the culture shift, the anti-Americanism, the embrace of, you know, things like communism and ideologically among young people. I see another problem that I think you kind of represent a good antidote to, which is, you know, our politics right now tends to reward the red meat thrower, the loudest, brashest, bulliest of people, right? And yeah, I don't have to name names for everybody to understand who I'm talking about, but it's not just at that level. I mean, it's at all levels. And, of course, you didn't behave that way. You're not a yeller and a screamer and a swearer, and your, you know, demeanor is basically kind and tolerant and patient, and let's talk about this and let's be statesmen. Did you find over a decade, I think, in Tallahassee, did you find that your way of doing politics became less and less viable?
Not really. I mean, it's I think members learn who each other really are, that, you know, their core values over a period of time when you deal with them on issues, and that's what I tried to do. I tried to treat even the Democrats, I mean, they represent the same number of people I do, and a lot of even these Democratic counties are 45% Republican. So you can't throw them away. You've got to include them in the conversation, and I think that's what we try to do in the last 2 years under President Pasadomo and Speaker Renner, is that we wanted to be inclusive, make sure that everyone had a voice. And in the appropriations process, we were very careful to make sure that everyone enjoyed the fact that we have become a state that every other state envies. We have so much resources, revenue, and we were able to keep a lot of those monies that the Fed sent us by doing non-recurring projects. And now we have $16 billion in the bank, and we spent $119 billion, and we're in pretty good shape. The beauty, I will say this, the beauty of you have really two major influencers in every body. One is the president, the other is the appropriations chair. And normally those two entities will have a disproportionate amount of funding go to their district. And that happened with us, and we're going to benefit from it. We're going to, when you see it all, you're going to be pretty amazed that the members were willing to let the Panhandle do so well. But it's been 80 years since we've had an appropriations chair, so we'll have to use this money for the next 80 years in some cases.
Oh, man. Last two, just sort of, you know, recap kind of questions. Do you, I'll go with the hard one first. Do you have a regret over your time in office? Anything that you weren't able to accomplish or something you did accomplish that you wish you hadn't?
You know, not really. I enjoyed my 14 years. The House was a little more difficult because it's more of a younger group.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate's more of a mature group, and I seem to do better there than in the House. But all of it was great. All of it was incredibly gratifying. You get, of course, you get a lot of attention when you're elected in any position. And I would think that being a legislator is probably the best because most people think I live in Washington.
You can't be gotten to. And then you have a thing that you're most proud of having accomplished or a favorite memory?
I think the thing that happened that it's kind of under the radar is that I was able to push across the health insurance for the 28 colleges who are state employees. They were excluded from that for many, many years, and that was a big, big lift. And now we have equity in our higher education system where all employees are treated the same. And to me, that was I'm a community college graduate, and I thought that was important that we make that process as equal as we could.
Very good. Well, I just got a text in here. I'll read it to you because I think you'll appreciate it. Somebody says, Doug is a true statesman. We're blessed for his service, and I would agree with that assessment. State Senator Doug Broxson, obviously you're still the state senator for several more months, but finishing your last session, your last term as appropriations chair, thank you so much for the time. Thank you for all of the years of service, and we expect we'll keep talking to you, obviously, as you work on the other project that you mentioned to us a moment ago. But thank you for the time this morning, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good day.